you know, I know, I think it's Webster County. They don't even have the option to take dental or vision as a voluntary. I mean, they don't put anything towards it, but my understanding is they don't even offer it to their employees.
There's cities that fall into that scenario as well.
Okay. I'd ask the two of you to stay there. Debbie, we're going to need your microphone. First person speaking, just come right up here and we'll hand you the microphone and you can speak is Margaret Janes.
I'll just let you sit.
Thank you.
Can I give you that? I'll just do this.
Real close? Yeah. Good morning. Margaret Janes, Environmental Health. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this a very important subject today. I applaud everything I've heard today. It sounds like excellent plan, and they are, you know, our employees are definitely deserving of an excellent plan. Having said that, I ask you to please consider an option of including in health a health reimbursement arrangement. And I'll just read a little bit that I got off of the My Task online website. A health reimbursement arrangement, HRA, is a tax-advantaged benefit that allows both employees and employers to save on the cost of health care. HRA plans are employer-funded medical reimbursement plans. The employer sets aside a specific amount of pre-tax dollars for employees to pay for health care expenses on an annual basis. Based on the plan design, HRAs can generate significant savings in overall health benefits. The primary requirements for an HRA are that, number one, the plan must be funded solely by the employer and cannot be funded by salary reduction, and number two, the plan may provide benefits for substantiated medical expenses only. HRAs may be designed in many fashions to suit the specific needs of employer and employees alike. It is one of the most flexible types of employee benefits plans, making it very attractive to most employers. During that survey that you passed around the county, I did ask about these types of opportunities for just to cover or make available something similar that we had before this all went down. And I've had a lot of people ask me what the response has been, and I have not heard any response yet, and I know this has all been in the works. So that's why I'm bringing this up in this venue so that we can discuss it as a group.
Super. Yeah, and I'd ask Alyssa and Debbie to weigh in on that. I'll give you my perspective, Margaret. First of all, I think it would be great if we could move toward a feature like that. The problem this year is, from my perspective, it is entirely employer funded.
Mm-hmm.
We've increased from $1.8 million what we were budgeting to $2.8 million what we were budgeting for this. And so trying to find the dollars to do it as we make this change, to me, is problematic. I view that as one of the first things I would want to include if we are able to move to a self-funded plan. It's one of the things I was referring to when I said it gives us ultra flexibility to really make something like that work. Debbie and Alyssa, I'd ask you to address Margaret's question.
Sure. Okay. Yes, and I was going to bring up after we did this, I did have a few employee comments that I want to address, too. There are HRAs and there are FSAs that you can look at as options. I know some employers, if you did not elect into their health insurance and get that contribution, they would fund a flexible spending account or a health reimbursement arrangement for you if you opt out of their insurance. Healthcare reform put some the employer can only put $500 into a flexible spending account per year or two times the employee's salary reduction. So it's very limited as far as how much they can put, and the cap on a flexible benefit is $2,500. I do have an opinion for an HRA from our attorney also. The HRAs now have to be paired with the group plan. So we couldn't have somebody that has a plan, a health insurance plan in the independent market, opt into an HRA, a health reimbursement arrangement. It has to be a group plan. So it could be the group plan here. It could be a group plan through a spouse. But an independent market health insurance plan does not work. Another portion of it was you can't use that money to pay for your group. If you have a group plan through a spouse, And they have a salary reduction for a premium. So they pay $250 a month for family plan. You know, they say, well, if you give us that money in an HRA, then we can supplement those premiums. You can't do that because those premiums are coming out of that individual's paycheck on a pre-tax basis.
Right.
You
so
can't take them out of the health
funded.
Reimbursement because that's a pre-tax basis. So that would be double dipping into those funds. There are some other, you know, when we look at it, you know, how does it go over to a retirement HRA? What are the limits? Different things like that. We could not, you know, if you look at this and you have the flexible benefit, the HRAs have to be completely pulled out of a cafeteria 125. So we have done some research. I do have an attorney opinion on the HRA. There are organizations that tie that to their group plan, and they put, I can't remember, there was a city, and I don't know if they put $100 a month into a health reimbursement. So instead of doing the flexible benefit, they do a contribution to an HRA. There are just a lot, since we do have a lot of individuals that have insurance in the independent market, it would not benefit them at all. I mean, they have to have it tied with group insurance.
Yep.
And there are some special regulations with whether it's TRICARE or Medicaid or different things like that. I think those regulations have been lifted. Mm-hmm. So that was a concern at first when we looked into it. Because we looked into what can we offer the employees that have outstanding health insurance outside of here and don't need our benefit. We are extremely limited to that. That's why you'll see the smaller flexible benefit as a good option. They can still take that amount in cash, versus a HRA or the flexible spending account looked like a great option at first. $2,500 a year is the max, until this year is the first year that the employer can only put $500 or two times the salary reduction. So unfortunately, that would have been an attractive option for somebody that's not on our plan.
But you can't.
But I can't. We can give them $500, but that's, you know, and there are some other higher level things that you have to do, you know, discrimination testing and stuff like that with that plan.
You guys charged for this year was to identify a plan that was compliant with the ACA, to identify a plan that benefited long term the employees of Story County within that compliance, and to do it in a way that we could actually fund. And I will say this, we raised the supplemental levy substantially. How much did we raise the supplemental levy? 40 cents, I mean, a substantial amount in order to pay for this additional $1 million. And there comes a point that trying to keep things as simple as we can this first year in, that it becomes unreasonable, at least in my view, to continue to raise that. Margaret, did she answer your questions?
Yes, I appreciate it. I do have a few more comments to that. So with the, there are, those limitations are not the same for the HRA, though. Is that correct? That's only the flex one.
The FSA.
So we could still do the HRA. And then also, a lot of those folks that are on the using the market insurance, I assume that when this county insurance is available, they will switch over to the county plan. So I don't know if there will be a lot of people on using market, independent. I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with the insurance jargon. Excuse me. The other thing is that, you know, you talk about the cost of this, and actually, if I were given the option of insurance, which, you know, I'm a fortunate one. My husband has excellent insurance, so I've always been on his. But I would consider, if I didn't have the option of taking an HRA, I would consider taking county insurance and have it as a secondary insurance on him, and his a secondary insurance on mine, and because we have some expenses. And I think that would cover the cost of the premiums that would come out of my pocket. So if I were given the opportunity instead to go with an HRA, that's a disincentive to take the county insurance, and then that would be a cheaper option for the county.
Well, cheaper short-term, Margaret, in that at the end of the day, the way our county insurance is going to be as cost-effective as possible is we have as many people as possible plan. And so giving a disincentive to somebody to be on the county plan, I think, is actually counterproductive to what we're trying to do here in the county.
To a point.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
If you get 100%, I don't think you're expecting 100% people to take this coverage. So if you get 100%, I think You'd be shooting yourself in the foot that way.
Yeah, but right now we're getting 20%. So there's a huge range between
because
20%
because it's a lousy. It's insufficient.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a balancing act. You want to come up with a benefit to get as many lives on the plan as you possibly can at an economical cost to our employees. So while this is a great, while an HRA, we do want as many people. We want the participation levels above 50% so that we can have the rates as they are. If you get the higher participation, the Coventry rates that you see here are based on a 50% participation. If we would get 70%, 75% participation, those current premiums go down 10%. We don't know until open enrollment how many people are going to enroll in the plan.
Sure.
The first year is a big challenge. Trying to budget for it, trying to develop a plan that is, that looks competitive for individuals and provides them with a really good insurance benefit.
Sure, but in the example Margaret just gave, and Margaret, I'll use you as the example here. If Margaret were to pick up the family $1,000 PPO, her out of pocket would be $120.46 per month. Her contribution would be $120.46 a month, but there's $145.29 in the vision and dental. So she could, in fact, by not taking the vision and dental, have money and then some to cover her premium to
Correct.
Be part of the plan and do exactly what you just talked about with the plan we're currently offering
right.
or we're currently discussing.
Yeah, if employees elect the $1,000 deductible family plan with the flexible benefit as proposed, there wouldn't be, we can't just take that premium and then only give them the extra in flex cash. They have to get the total flex cash and the $120 and some odd cents comes out as a pre-tax. So they're really not paying $120 because it's a salary reduction. So they wouldn't be paying FICA, federal and state tax on that $120 of salary that is actually being
super.
Probably be about $100 or so, depending on their tax. Each individual is going to be different.
Okay. Great.
Well, Alyssa, my thought and also to Margaret is listening to you two and knowing how little I know about this whole insurance market and all of this, I definitely appreciate your background and information. I'm concerned whatever plan we select today and move forward, the educational piece that we're going to put in place to aid employees in understanding more about what options are available so that they can make a uniform and a wise decision at the time of open enrollment. Because, there are some will get it, but I can say I believe the majority of them probably aren't. And I want to just make sure that we are doing all we can to educate our employees of the options.
What Debbie and I have talked about is once the board makes a decision on what carrier, what plans, we will bring in a representative from that insurance company and hold meetings so individuals can ask questions. They can also ask personalized questions because you may have a medical condition that you're very familiar with and what you're current and you want to know how that is going to look on the new plan. And so we bring in the individuals that know exactly how it works. We're just waiting for a final decision from the board. And then as soon as we can possibly get them before open enrollment, we want them to come in so that our employees have the option to look at, here's the plans that are offered. Here's how they compare to what I currently have. Here's the contribution rates. What's the best for each employee? It's, mm-hmm. It may be better for them to stay with their spouse's insurance. If they work for Iowa State, we aren't going to compete with their coverage.
Margaret, we've got at least four others who want to speak. Any other pressing issues that we need to deal with?
I'm just going to ask again that the board consider an HRA because career decisions have been made on the benefit package that we used to have, and now it's changing considerably. And so those decisions were made on information that has changed a lot now.
Not our choice, Mark.
Not our choice.
I do know that, but not my choice either.
Right.
And so if we can maybe try to get it a little more even, like the old one, it would be really appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I have Susie Lang. She had to go back to work. Sean Fletcher. Fletchall.
Hi, I'm Sean Fletchall. I'm with the County Attorney's Office, and I'm going to try to keep it short. I know it's hard for attorneys to do so. First off, when I came on in 2013, I recognized fairly early on that this plan probably wouldn't pass muster with the ACA. And when the decision finally, or when we were finally informed the decision had come in, there was a lot of anxiety with everybody, as I'm sure the board as well. But I just wanted to commend you publicly for the work you've done. And I'm really excited about the fact that you're looking forward towards what could happen in the future. Because it's important to realize and recognize that there's going to be increases even with whatever plan you select. And moving towards a self-insured plan, I think, is a very, very wise decision to make. And so I wanted to commend you for that. And I'm excited to hear that that's what you're working towards. And like you said, making lemonade out of lemons. Some people don't like lemonade. And it's just the way it is. So I want to thank you for your work, and that's pretty much it.
Thank you. Thanks for spending time to come over. Next, we have Ethan Anderson.
Yes, thank you. I'm Ethan Anderson. I'm also with the County Attorney's Office. I don't have a lot to add to what my colleague said, except that with that initial anxiety, we did have a lot of discussions in the office, you know, as I'm sure other offices had discussions in their groups. And I can only address for myself personally. My wife and I purchased our own insurance through Wellmark, and we kept seeing this cost skyrocket. We get a notice every couple months, your premiums are going up, your premiums are going up. And so I think the opportunity to whatever plan the county board selects here, I think my wife and I will utilize one of those plans. I'll just talk to her. She's the comptroller, and we'll see which one we're going to go for. I'm excited, and I appreciate all Alyssa's hard work and the board's hard work. And thank you.
Thank you for coming over today. And Connie Torsdahl,
Christ.
Who I don't recognize today because she's out of uniform.
Here's trouble.
Connie Torsdahl, Story County Sheriff's Office. I've spoken to you guys in the past. I do have some questions. One of them is you had mentioned in your discussion, Alyssa or Deb, that this you were talking about a 3-year contract. So the figures that the board decides to go with today, I'm assuming you're making a decision today, is this going to be a 3-year contract, or is every year you're going to open up to new insurance companies?
Sorry. Oh, no, that's okay. I'll share.
Yeah, the 3-year is the goal. That would be a goal to get to self-insured. Each year, we can't see in the future as far as what the rates are going to go up. So you do have to reanalyze every year. It would probably be around budget time. We would have our renewals back in usually March. I actually, with ISAC, we knew by the end of the, by January, what our premiums were going to be next July. So these contribution rates are for 1 year. As you looked at them, you may wonder, well, how did you do this? One of the comments we received when we sent out the initial one was, you know, it looks like 90% single, but 90% family. You know, the employer's paying a lot more. Can you look at paying more of a single? There's quite a few employees that only need single coverage. So when you look at the Coventry, because of the way the premiums are, we were able to kind of budget as much as we can because we have a certain amount of numbers or figures there, and we don't know how many plans we're actually going to have to pay for in the next fiscal year. So if you look at the Coventry, the $1,000 plan, these are just figures so the board can make a decision on their contribution rates. I did figure in there 99%, and that's for the single and 90% family. How we tried to, based on whether it's Coventry, United Healthcare, or Wellmark, what could we afford at what contribution rates?
Based on what we budgeted.
What we budgeted. Now we do have to look at the renewal in a year, not to set those contribution rates too high to where next year, say we get a 20 to 25% rate increase, can we afford
to keep those contribution levels. So we looked at that too when developing. Sure.
Well, and two things about the 99%, and I appreciate that you pointed that out. 99% of the employer paid single on the $1,000 PPO plan with Coventry. Two things. One, it guarantees that any of our employees who want to opt out can opt out. And two, some of us feel pretty strongly that everybody ought to have skin in the game. This should not be 100% employer provided, even if it's, in this case, $4.54 employee monthly contribution in order to have it. It's almost nothing, but it's not nothing. And I felt that was really, really important. I know, Alyssa, you and I talked a lot about that. I appreciate you mentioning it. So, Connie, I think the answer to your question is these would not be for 3 years, but I believe that I'm correct when I say it would be our intention to pick one of these, and unless something drastic happened, to stick with that plan until we get to such time as we can move to self-insurance, if in fact that's where the county goes.
And budgeting will be, you know, after you know your number on the plan, when you get into next budget, you know how much to budget for. This year, you know, we really don't have any idea.
Right.
I mean, it was a challenge, you know, and
hopefully we did a good job, as good as we could based on the information we had at the time.
Yeah, because we didn't have the quotes at the time of budgeting either, right. So.
Sorry. Question. No, that's okay. Another question I have is, you have three options under each insurance plan. As we realize how many people will be taking county insurance, would more options be available or added to these plans, or is it just strictly going to be these three plans?
I'll talk to that. As we look forward to, you know, when you're fully insured, and Debbie can talk about this too, when you go to underwriting, you offer three plans, four plans. We currently offer five. The premiums would be easier for an underwriter to project the least number of plans that you offer. So if you only offer two, your premiums are going to be lower on those plans than if you offer three, four, five. So looking in the future, the fewer plans that you get could keep your premiums down. Now looking at Coventry, if you look at the difference between the three plans and you look at the premium difference versus the deductible, you know, there really isn't a difference. You'll notice I didn't, we did quote a $2,000 PPO deductible plan. It had a $20 copay instead of a $15 copay, and we were talking $20 or $30 a month. And it had a specialty copay, and it subjected, you know, our employees to another $1,000 in deductible. So when we look at developing plans, we pay really close attention to the copay or coinsurance for office visits, the deductible, and especially the out-of-pocket max. So if I were to recommend something to the board, I would recommend two plans to do the coinsurance.
Absolutely. But the answer to Connie's question is it is not your proposal, nor do I believe this board's intention that we would go beyond the three that are listed and could possibly even move to two. Hopefully they'd be two really, really good plans, but I don't think you'd see a scenario where we would go beyond the three that are listed.
And if you look at different counties and cities, what they offer, a lot of them offer a PPO and an HMO plan. And the PPO costs the employees more because it's a richer plan. The HMO really controls who they go to and who is in the network. Here, the Coventry and the United Healthcare, we don't have an HMO. It wasn't cost effective to offer an HMO to our employees when you limit, you know, the Mayo Clinic's not in the network. Well, that's a huge factor that a lot of individuals look at. They want to be able to go to the Premier Hospital if they need to.
Mm-hmm. And Connie, it's not uncommon that many entities that have had multiple plans are now looking at the market the way it is now are going with a limited number. Three is a lot. And I've done some research and talking to people through other boards and commissions that I serve on and other supervisors. And so I think that we have, for historically, when we look at the five plans that we used to offer, and then you start looking at the number of people that are utilizing, even though we had a small pool, I think the long-term and not necessarily the ease of management, but that does factor into it. If you can identify at least two outstanding plans to offer, I think you're well further along in the whole process, and your predictability year after year is a lot greater. And so I applaud Alyssa in at least, you know, bringing forth at least three options for us to consider at this point, even though, as we say, that may, you know, also can be reduced by one.
And I've always applauded Alyssa on all the work that she's done, because I know she's done a lot of work on this. The frustrating thing, and I know everybody is frustrated, is the whole situation anyway. But my husband and I are currently with Wellmark. We've not gotten any notices in the mail that our prices are going up, and the insurance that I currently have outside of here is much better insurance than this. Now, I am not going to be able to afford that with the cut I am going to be taking, and it's just frustrating to go to something, and then in the future I'm going to know that possibly the insurance that I want is not even going to be offered with the organization that I've been with for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So that's just my frustration, and I just wanted my answers clarified, and I thank you.
Yeah, understandable, Connie, and I'm sorry for your frustration.
Yeah.
That is all that I had who requested to speak, but we'll go ahead and open it up if there is anybody else who would like to address the board on this topic. Okay, seeing no one moving, it seems to me, Alyssa, and help me through this, we've got three different parts of this that we're considering. We're considering carrier and plan options, one. We're considering life and disability and where that resides, whether it resides in supplemental or not in supplemental. Mm-hmm. And we're considering flex benefit and what, if anything, that is tied to. Does that sound right for the three parts of this that
yes.
we're considering?
Yes.
We're considering those
separately. Mm-hmm.
You want them separately. All right,
yep.
So let's deal with the plan. Let's deal with the provider and then plan options first. Paul Wayne, thoughts?
You know, I've thought a lot about the amount of contribution that the county's is going to make. I've been here a long time. There's somebody in here that's been here a lot longer than I have, but past boards and even this board have said that it was our intention or our goal to try to pay 100% of an employee's single health care premium. We haven't been able to do that in quite a while. Before you and I were on the board, they increased the flex cash by $25 a month from $550 to $575. I thought, yeah, we do need to be paying 100% of a single employee's plan. But then I thought, no, you know, we haven't been able to do that. We've come close. But if we have a plan that's available that the county is going to pay 99% of, and that employee has to pay $4.54 a month out of their pocket to get that single plan, that's better than we've been able to do in a long time. And I think you're right. We do, you know, I think we'll get along better if the employee does have some skin in the game. And I realize that this has been a difficult road for everybody that's worked here. So, but you know, that being said, and Wayne, you can weigh in on this as you want, but I'm going to make a motion that we choose Coventry as our healthcare provider, and that we go with the three plans that are listed and the contribution rates that are included in the documentation here today.
Okay, so Coventry with three plans as listed in the documentation here today. That's a motion.
And I'm going to second it reluctantly.
Okay, seconded reluctantly. Now let's have the conversation. Do we want to stick with three? Do we want to go with two? Specifically, the 500 and the 1,000 would be my initial thought. We've got the quotes in front of us, so I don't see it as causing us a lot of issue. Debbie, do you have thoughts? Alyssa, I heard you to say that you thought two was probably preferable. Debbie, give us your advice.
Think,
I think Alyssa is correct on that. I think two is preferable to three as it relates to future increases. And I don't think there's enough difference to make that $750
plan
all that significant. Families may be much more inclined to look at the $1,000 plan because it's less coming out of their pocket,
right,
understandably. But yet anyone that knows that they'll have higher medical expenditures will look very carefully at that $500 plan. I just think strategically two is better than three. And, you know, there really are a number of counties and cities that actually offer just one option. I'm not suggesting you do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that to offer two is still reasonable. That would be
right,
as it relates to, yeah, to future rate.
Right. Paul, it's your motion, so I'll ask you for thoughts first.
I agree. There's not that much difference. There's $250 difference in the amount between the three deductibles. Obviously, the amount of the premium, you know, is $20 one way or the other. So I'll be happy to amend my motion to eliminate the $750 PPO deductible plan from the Coventry proposal and go with the $500 and $1,000 deductible.
I would support that amendment. That was something that I was going to propose, so I'm glad that you were willing to
all right,
take
so
a look at that.
On the table in front of us is Coventry with the $500 and the $1,000 plan as listed, removing the $750 plan. Further discussion? Alyssa, anything to add?
The only thing that, and if you're going to do it in a separate, you need to set the contribution rates. Or are you going to set them as presented?
What's been moved is as presented.
As presented,
so
which is
90% of the single on the 500 PPO, 80% of the family on the 500 PPO, 99% of the $1,000 PPO plan single, and 90% of the $1,000 PPO plan for family. That get it all set in the record? Shelley, that gets it all set for you? We're all clear. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Coventry health insurance with the $500 PPO and the $1,000 PPO with the contribution levels as listed. Next item is life and disability. As I understand it, there's two possibilities for how we do this. I think originally when we started talking through the budgeting process, we had assumed life and disability remaining with the flex, even though it's not an option for the employees to ever get the cash.
Okay.
So it's dollars that look like maybe the employee's getting it, but the employee never does. If we don't go that route and we pull it out and we say we're paying, Story County is paying 100% of life and disability,
mm-hmm,
we can run it through the supplemental.
Correct.
Right.
And you don't have to take into consideration any rate increases next year and when you're setting that.
So it will look like, if we keep it with the flexible benefit, it'll look like we're providing more flexible benefit when in reality we're not providing any more flexible benefit.
Right.
Well, how do you come to that conclusion? I mean, just
because it's a mandate. So right now, everybody gets $575.
Gotcha.
But they don't really get $575.
Right,
they get $575 minus life
30,
and disability.
Whatever it is.
It's different. And there's the difference. It's different per employee. So we could continue to do that, or we could just say, hey, we're paying 100% of this. It's in the supplemental, and we run it through that way. I don't have a huge, strong feeling on this.
I guess going back to past history and where we were and looking at, you know, how employees are basically looking at the total dollars that they had choices of the 575. I think by us taking this step, it doesn't come close to making up for that 575 difference, but at least moves again us into considering an option that I think has the interests of the employees at hand in terms of recognition that if we fund this at 100%, this life and disability, I think is a very good option for us to consider.
And we're talking about funding it at 100%. It's just a mandatory.
Right.
The employee has no choice at all of
choice.
Whether they take
no
it.
No choice. That's
and
right.
So for me, if all things are equal, and you guys can tell me if you feel like there's inequality here, if all things are equal, I think we run it through the supplemental account. We say you're getting life and disability, but it's running through the supplemental account.
Right.
It's not part of these fictional these flex dollars that you don't ever see anyway.
Right.
Well, I think it's cleaner that way. There's no mistake.
Right.
We agree to pay the life and the disability, which is mandatory.
Right.
So you can't opt out even if you wanted to. And we separate that from the dental and the vision.
Okay.
And I would make that as a motion.
Super.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Did we miss anything, Alyssa?
Nope.
All right. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Life and disability will be fully funded by Story County, but it will run through supplemental. Now let's talk about what remains of flex.
Yes, go ahead.
The proposal that we have worked through to this point for consideration by the board is that we would continue to provide a flex benefit to our employees at a rate that is equal to the actual cost of family vision and family dental each year or for the year prior. When do you have those rates? I can't remember.
Would have the rates by
you
now.
You would have them. So it is
equal to family vision.
Equal to family vision and family dental.
Okay.
The employee may either take family vision and or family dental, or they may get that cash in their paycheck as a taxable item. That's the entirely the employee's choice.
Right.
That's what we've talked about to this point. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So, board, it's to us. Do we want to stick with what we've talked about and what I think we tried to budget toward, or do we want to change that somehow?
Well, I think that's what we tried to budget towards, and I don't know that we want to necessarily throw Lisa another curveball at this point. I mean,
keeps her young.
Right. We've certified our budget, so that's what we have to live with for the next fiscal year. And I recognize, and so does everybody else, that the $145 and change is not the $550, give or take, that employees were getting in the past.
Sure.
And really what we're trying to do, for lack of a better term, is we're trying to throw a bone at the employees to try to soften the blow a little bit.
Well, and hopefully more than just throwing a bone, it gives the employees some flexibility to get some cash if they choose to, or I'll tell you, I'm going to have real interest in the family vision and the family dental because it's a good plan that the county is willing to pick up 100% of it if you take it. So I view it as maybe a little more than that, but there's no doubt it's an acknowledgement of our previous system and us doing as much as we can do.
Right. And if you're in a situation where, you know, you don't get your insurance through your spouse or your spouse doesn't have that option, it's a great option to have if you can take, dental and vision. You go to the eye doctor and you buy a set of progressive bifocals and you pay $600. So, it's a good option.
Is it a motion?
Yes.
Okay. So motion that we would do flex. It would be tied to the actual premium cost for family vision and family dental.
$145.30.
Well, what's it tied to
then?
I mean, that's my concern. And Lisa, I do lay awake at night worrying about all the extra work we're giving you. But I like it tied to something very specific. That's the way I felt all the way through. You guys can outvote me if you want.
I can amend the motion to say to the nearest dime.
Perfect. So you're let's start over with flex. Okay. Make whatever motion you want.
I'll stick with my first motion. I'm sorry,
Lisa.
All right. Do we have a second?
You don't have to worry about losing any hair like me, so we'll keep it with the original motion. I think you can have it.
Wayne, do you second
the motion? I second the motion.
Further discussion. Tied to actual cost to the penny for family vision and family dental.
I tried. Aye.
Toot? Aye. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Flex benefit passes. actual costs of family vision, family dental. Consideration of what Margaret proposed. Talk us through that, what that would look like if we were to go down that road of setting up a separate account.
For an HRA?
Yep.
It would take a little bit. It has to be tied to, like I said, it has to be tied to a group. So I'm not sure. We currently have our flexible benefit that's tied to a cafeteria 125. My understanding is you can't have the HRA and the flexible benefit. So the fact that you have that, it's one or the other. You either have the HRA or you have that flexible benefit where you give your employees a set number of dollars where they can take that in cash or allocate it to dental or vision. You can't have both.
Okay.
The group.
Debbie, is that your understanding as well?
My question, and a lot of it has to do with timing and where we're going, but with more study, is this something that at least a year from now when we're looking and comparing where we are, that we could take a look at again to see if that versus the flexible
Absolutely.
Portion?
You just can't have both.
Right.
So
right.
The board would have to make a determination.
Right.
You know, are we going to offer an HRA where we put a contribution into a health reimbursement account for our employees, or are we going to offer the flexible benefit package where they're able to take the amount in cash? They can't take the amount contributed to an HRA in cash. They can under that flexible benefit. The HRA contributions can be only used for medical, which you can use for dental and vision. But that's a consideration you'll have to take. That was one of the downfalls is you can't give your employees the choice, the HRA or the flexible benefit. They can't have both of them. It's you offer one to the group.
Okay.
Now, you know, depending on.
Assuming that the flex can be taken in cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing to remember though with the HRA, two things. I know we've said it, but I just want to stress it. Unless you enroll in the county's group health plan or your spouse's group health plan, you can't have an HRA.
Okay.
It can't be an individual health plan.
Okay.
Now, that didn't used to be that way.
Okay, so what we just did is applicable to all employees, regardless of whether they take our insurance, they have their own insurance, they're on their spouse's insurance.
For the
Every
non-union.
Single employee
Absolutely.
Will share in this flex that we just passed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The HRA, that it would not necessarily apply to every single employee.
It might not. If you don't enroll in the county's plan, and in addition to that, you're not on a spouse's group plan.
So if you had an individual plan, so some of our employees who carried their own individual plan for whatever reason would not qualify this year. See, to me, that's just one step too far this first year with so many unknowns, but I would ask that you guys keep it on the radar for next year or years beyond, especially if, in fact, we move towards self-insurance. It seems to me to be a really reasonable component for us to look at offering.
They are great benefits. The
yep.
HRAs are great benefits, yes.
I just want to have more knowns than we have right now before we get there. It just sounds to me like that would be one more unknown. Paul and Wayne, I'll ask you guys if you feel differently. So we don't have to take action on what Margaret asked.
I would like to see us get through this first
year.
First premium year, and have serious consideration of moving towards being able to be self-insured, and then maybe once we look at that closer, then we can look at adding that as an additional benefit.
Okay, super. Wayne, any thoughts?
No, I just think that what she's brought to the table for us to consider, while it's not being acted on now, I think it's seriously something that we ought to keep on the radar and study further. I don't know whether or not, as an employer, it makes a difference in terms of the interest of our employees toward what benefits that might be down the road. Again, that's another factor for us to basically consider. But I think what it does is, again, saying that we're willing to listen to suggestions and ideas from people that has a sound basis for us to provide something that would benefit our employees. And I don't ever want to be in a situation where a good idea can be brought to the table and I just basically say, well, no, right now we're not going to consider it and it's done. I think this one needs a little bit more study from my standpoint, but I think I'd like to have us keep it on the radar and a year from now or whenever, even before that, study this a little bit further.
Outstanding. All right. That's where we are on that then. Anything else we need to talk about with insurance?
Go ahead.
The only, since there's some strategic planning as we talk about moving towards a self-funded medical plan, I would also encourage you to give consideration to moving to a self-funded dental plan.
Okay.
And then the only other thing I might add with regard to the HRA that most public entities who have them are also having to look at now and in the next couple of years is that the dollars that are attributable to an HRA, it is believed that those will need to be added to premium for purposes of looking at the Cadillac tax.
Okay.
And so that's also something that will need to be on your radar screen as you look to make decisions in the future.
Well, I know this is not the last conversation we're going to have about our
benefit.
Most
unfortunately, no, I'm sure it's not.
Debbie, we are really, really appreciative that you're our broker. You've done a great job helping us, helping lead us through a really tough situation. Thank you so much for your work and diligence on getting these different options for us, and we appreciate your guidance in the future as we move toward what will hopefully become a self-insured plan for Story County. Thank you. With that, Alyssa, every employee in Story County, if they're not, they ought to be really, really appreciative to you for the time and effort that you put into what was a really tough situation. I happen to know firsthand the number of long hours, late evenings, and frankly, probably sleepless nights that you've had over this. You've done a phenomenal job leading us through this. This is a tough situation. A lot of employees are understandably frustrated, concerned, and probably unhappy with the decision this board made. You gave us the information we had to have. I know it didn't happen as quickly as you would have liked it to happen, not through your efforts, but just because that's the reality of the beast. I think it's important that you know publicly from this board how much we value you and how appreciative we are of the efforts you put in, not only on this, everything you do, but specifically today as we talk about the insurance benefits. Thank you very much.
All right. Well stated.
We're going to take a 2-minute recess, and then we're going to move on to discussion and consideration of funding requests for continued facilitation services for the Demand Response Transportation Group. 2-minute recess. Ready. All right, we'll call us back into session, and we will get started. Consideration of funding requests for continued facilitation services for Demand Response Transportation Group. Deb Shildroth.
Is this on?
I would use the other one, please.
Okay. Okay, what this request is, it's actually a continuation of the Demand Response Transportation Group that started meeting last fall and worked on looking at issues and solutions to public transportation for Ames and Story County. We used Nancy France to help facilitate those discussions with the task force members. And we're at the point now of wanting to advance those efforts and to put into implementation the top four priorities that came from that process. And we'd like to continue using Nancy to help facilitate the group. She knows the members, is very familiar with the issues, and this would be a shared expense then with the City of Ames. We're looking at the amount requested from the county is $1,500 with a maximum of up to $3,000. This process would last beginning this month through September, and we would be updating our respective boards periodically on the progress. And the dollars that are available to help support this are unallocated dollars to the asset process for fiscal year 15.
And my understanding is Nancy, who is a really dynamic lady, has done a phenomenal job leading this group.
Mm-hmm. Very happy with her.
Board thoughts, questions? Motion.
Well, I don't think it'd make any sense for us to stop the process after the first step. I think we need to continue it through. It's not a huge amount of money, but I think it's something that we need to look at seriously. And I would make the motion that we approve the funding for up to minimum of $1,500 for up to $3,000 for this.
Second.
Motion and second, just pointing out or underscoring this would be matched by the City of Ames. What we do, we're partners with Ames, City of Ames in this. We have a motion and second. Further discussion? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Deb, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and consideration of primary health care's request for funding for the Story County Clinic. Deb Shildroff. Deb, this is something I came to you with. I don't know. It's time's running for me, but it's probably been a month, 6 weeks ago that we talked about it and asked you to look into it. This is a group, primary health care, has come to Story County, provide health care for lower income and those who frankly don't get the health care they need anywhere else. We're so glad to have them in the community, but they have had substantial cost in getting ready to serve this community. And, Deb, I'll turn it to you.
All right. Thank you. And I do have representatives from primary health care with me this morning as well to address any questions that the board may have. But just quickly, I want to point out primary health care is what's technically called a federally qualified health center. What that means is in order to establish that kind of center in any community, it has to go through a competitive grants process with the federal government. And Kelly knows also well that it took at least a couple of
three times
to submit the grant and a lot of her hard work and others in the community to get this to become a reality here in Story County. So we're very, very pleased about that. But with that kind of status, there are certain requirements or standards that the federal government has in place. Not only does primary health care have the physical care kinds of services that have to be available, but they also have to assure that there is access to dental care and to mental health care. And in our situation here in Story County, they are partnering with the Story County Dental Clinic to help meet that dental care requirement. And then they're also partnering with Irely Ball Community Mental Health Services to help with the mental health part of it. So it does give this holistic approach to health care that we're hearing so much about through affordable care and other avenues. So I think it's important to realize that there are some standards and levels of expectation from the federal side of things with this kind of clinic. So primary health care, they opened their clinic in January of 2014. They had a temporary home on Duff across from Mary Greeley Medical Center until they could find space that was conducive to their services. That space was located in West Ames near the Phillips 66 gas station. It's right on a bus route, right on Lincoln Way, very good location. Remodeling went underway. They moved in December, and they're still looking at recouping or finding ways to recoup dollars to help pay for that remodel and that expansion. Within the proposal, they talk about the number of patients that they have served since opening in 2014. That's 1,337 patients, and 81% of those individuals live in Story County. 66% live in Ames and 14% live in other Story County communities. So I think we can say it's safe to say that this will just continue to grow given the demand for services and the access to care. They are looking at requesting $50,000 from the county to help with their new location. And so with that, I will stop talking. I will open up to questions, and Kelly and Ryan can respond.
Kelly, Ryan, I think I'll start with.
I don't know if we actually need any comments. I did go over for the open house. I was very impressed with the operation and the service. I was also in conversation prior to that with Mayor Campbell, again, talking about the value and the importance of what this does for Ames and the clients that will be served by this agency. And while I'm probably not 100% sure, but I think Ames currently and City Council may or may not necessarily want to commit to assisting in direct funding, I believe that This is certainly part of our mission to provide proper health care, be it including dental, mental health, and other things to a clientele that otherwise would find it very difficult to be able to find adequate service. And I was in my conversation with Deb, I was also made aware that both McFarland and Mary Greeley have already stepped up to the plate to have made sizable contributions towards this. They too see the tremendous benefit. And my initial question was, is since this is an unfunded request, it's something that wasn't figured into the budgeting, what capacity we had without automatically just using our ending fund balances, even though I believe right now it's in a better shape that we could do that. And in one of my discussions with Deb yesterday, and I don't know if she wanted to go into that, I'm not sure, Rick or Paul, if you're aware, but in discussing some possible funding that we will perhaps be receiving through Optime with the vans and the vehicles, there is some dollars there that I think if we decide to utilize it in that capacity could go towards meeting this request. And I would say that I'm kind of on board in trying to figure out a way that we could support this. When you go back and look at historically, we normally have always tried to fund services and equipment necessarily, and not necessarily toward a building or something of this nature. But I equate this a little bit to the SCORE facility here in Nevada and what we did in Story City over time because of the clientele that it was serving and a need that was being addressed for citizens in Story County. And so I believe that while this is not going to be opening Pandora's box, that we're going to get into wanting to contribute towards any entity that wants to go out and construct or operate a health clinic or something of this nature. We're going to take a look at each and every one on an individual basis to determine if it is appropriate for our consideration. So right now, I'm comfortable in supporting this request.
Thank you. Yeah, Wayne, I agree with everything you just said. I'll add one thing that was important to me and something I ask of Deb, and that is to find the precedent that we can use. I'm not sure that I do see this as the SCORE Pavilion or the pool up in Story City, but I do very clearly see it as the dental clinic where I believe we contributed some dollars toward equipment within. And as I read through the information here, it looks to me like there was almost $750,000 of renovation cost, but that includes a substantial portion of equipment. Which seems to me, and in full disclosure, I met with Kelly and Ryan, again, I think it's been six weeks ago, a couple months ago, and talked this through and then turned it over to Deb, and Deb has done her usual outstanding job in making sure we pull something together. But I think there is precedence for us to fund something like this from an equipment point of view. I think that $50,000 is a reasonable amount. I think that there are members. First of all, this is an unbelievably necessary thing for our community, and I think by and large has huge support from our healthcare community. So I think we should do it. I think a completely appropriate use of some of the dollars that we're receiving from selling equipment that was utilized, primarily vehicles, but equipment that was used from CLP, shifting some of those dollars into this is exactly the right way to go. And so, Wayne, I'm right with you on all of it. I just see the precedent as being what we've done, what Story County did for the dental clinic.
Yes, I certainly agree with that. I wanted to ask the question, and I guess she's gone now. But, Paul, has there been any discussion, and Deb, has there been any discussion at all with environmental health? You know, again, looking at way that you can tie in overall health goals and needs for a particular county. I don't know if this, not that, because this is something that we do aid in funding. I would assume they would be on board, but I don't know if this was been ever something that was even discussed with environmental health in terms of, again, a valuable service to the clients in Story County.
Well, I don't think we've ever had the discussion with environmental health. That, you know, we farmed the public health portion of
yeah. Well, I guess that you're right. That's the term. Probably public health is what I'm referring to. Yes. Okay. Okay, but no discussion as far as you know.
No.
Yeah. Comment? Yes.
Oh, I was just going to say we work closely with Mary Greeley and the homework group on public health, so we certainly are in touch with them.
Other questions or thoughts? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I would move approval of the request for the $50,000 to primary health funding for the clinic.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thank you very much. We're glad you guys are in Story County. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Deb, thank you. Next item is consideration of an agreement between ISU Research Park and Story County for the development and operation of Phase 3 of the ISU Research Park and discussion of funding by Story County Board of Supervisors, Mike Cox. Ted, there's always room for you. Come on up.
Mike, please.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. No.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Excuse me. Anyway, this thing warms up. I'll make my portion of the remarks. Ted Tedesco, chairman of the Story County Conservation. I think, first of all, one of the important things here is that this is a chance again for five governmental agencies to cooperate together to start to work on what's become a very serious problem in Iowa, and that's the quality of our water. There is a lot of concern about stormwater runoff from all the hard surfaces that we've created as streets, roads, trails, paths, roofs, etc. Actually, in this particular cooperative project, there would be ownership of land by Story County within the ISU Research Park and the City of Ames. One of the things that publicly now has become very much aware is that the runoff contains a lot of the nitrates, the phosphates, et cetera, that cause a problem with our water. Unbeknownst to most people, the EPA has been looking at this problem also. And there has been some consideration and talk about a future where communities across the nation would have to treat this runoff as they do their wastewater today. Essentially, what that means is that most communities would have to at least double the size of their wastewater treatment facilities. And that's a very, very expensive issue. What we hope in conservation that we can do is make this project a best practices classroom for everybody to share how to start to treat stormwater runoff so that it is not a problem that's going to cause a great expense to communities, and it's going to help solve the issue of the quality of our water and improve it greatly. And there has been great cooperation between all five agencies to come to this fruition.
Name those five, Ted.
Story County, Story County Conservation, the City of Ames, ISU Research Park, and Iowa State University.
Thank you.
And the DOT, so there's really six with the RISE grant. And on the outside, there is some other state money that might become important.
Indirectly, I think they're very clearly their
right.
State money
and
through
course,
some of the economic development.
Of course, one of the other things is that this will provide an opportunity for connectability of the trails so that people from all over the county can get down to the high trestle bridge or to the trail that we have across the southern part of the county.
Outstanding. So, thank you.
That's a good health issue for public, too.
Very good. Well, any questions?
Go.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you, Ted. And with us this morning also is Nathan Easter of the Research Park, if there's any questions. I've just got some handouts there that Ted will be bringing by. I think you're all familiar. Ted gave a very, very good synopsis of the project that we are considering.
Yeah, a few of them.
Yeah, just a few.
Thank you. Good.
All right. First off, Ted talked clearly about the need for clean water. I think this is, as he has alluded to, is a very clear need in the state, in the nation, a need that we have not satisfactorily met, and lots of reasons for that. The goals of this project, you see across the top of that slide, these are identified as the three pillars of the Research Park master plan, and really the three pillars of this partnership to provide both economic impacts, economic benefits, social benefits, and environmental benefits by this partnership. So clearly you can see that with environmental improvements, which is what we are proposing in this project, that is going to lead to cleaner water and cleaner land. And of course with that, more people are interested in getting outside, enjoying those recreational opportunities. Those in turn lead to, and in particular the research park is interested in this, and it is increased work productivity. And following closely is of course better success of the businesses within that area. Some of the considerations that we're looking at in this project is one, restoration of the natural resources on the site. The area has some significant erosion problems in the stream that does transect it, so we would be looking at doing a stream mitigation project there. And Ted also mentioned DOT partnership. They are willing to commit some funds to assist with both stream and woodland mitigation. In addition, we would be reconstructing a prairie out of what is currently now agricultural fields. As Ted said as well, we are going to use this project to model sustainable development techniques, to model stormwater management, and then now we get into this kind of the social considerations and the healthful considerations, and doing all of this in a manner that really encourages people to get outdoors and enjoy those amenities. This project is proposing to be a model site for how corporate development can be done hand in hand with natural resource protection and development, as a project that done very little, or I should say that kind of partnership is done very little across the nation, and this could be a wonderful opportunity to do that, to utilize those partners and to promote that and to try to get more developments across the country. So, and I'll just go very quickly. I'll talk a little bit about some of the specifics on what this project would involve. Natural resource restoration maps. The area that we are talking about in this project is this area right here. So everything in the inside this yellow line, I know that color's hard to see up there, but everything inside this line here is land that would be transferred over to the county. So within that area, we would develop a series of, restore the natural resources within that area. So everything you see in the kind of the tan colored area, that would be prairie. The green would be riparian areas or woodland areas, and then you see the stormwater management that would really mimic a wetland would be located on in this area. The trails, as Ted mentioned, one of the big components of this project is to use this as a tool to link trail connectivity, or to get that trail connectivity better from Ames out to the High Trestle Trail down to the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and connect to the Central Iowa Trails Network. So in addition to that outside connectivity, we would have trail options within that area that would be wonderful opportunities for workers at the research park to get out and enjoy breaks, hike through the woods, go through the prairie, and just enjoy being outside, period. As far as the connectivity out to R38, the bike lane there, or down to the High Trestle Trail, Heart of Iowa Trail, we are in the process of working with the university and the research park and identifying that route. A route has not been identified yet.
The slash lines are all university property?
Correct. And the research park, of course, is right here. This is R38 here. This is Kelly right here. So in addition to that, and again, as a in a way to model, if you will, sustainable practices throughout the site, we really view that as a key part of this project, and that would be done. Currently, right now, in our environmental education program, we're very strong on K-6 programming, but we really drop off at that level. I shouldn't say we drop off. We're not as strong after 6 as we are in K-6. And one of the things that this project provides an opportunity for us is to get some, say, middle school, high school, college students out there and to really use some of these modeling or demonstration sites as educational opportunity, as well to work with the businesses in the site and any other businesses in town and develop some both some environmental education programming, maybe some service learning type of projects, and some education based around those sustainability practices. So what this video is just an example of some of those sustainability practices. This is a permeable parking lot, things like this, although we're not proposing in this project to develop any parking lots as far as the county's concerned. This is the kind of thing that we would be looking at as far as putting those sustainable practices on site. This is a obviously a fire truck that's unloading in this parking lot, and you see the perimeter of where that water is going. This is a wonderful way to treat stormwater, essentially let it be treated by nature the way it was intended to be. As far as the stream goes, I mentioned the stream that does transect the property right now. It's incised greatly. There are several nick points in that stream. It is a very degraded stream. The surrounding riparian area is very degraded. It's a very, very poor quality. It's a very, there's a lot of invasive species there. There's a lot of low-quality brush that is, in fact, making the stream degradation worse by inhibiting grass along the stream corridor, which then minimizes erosion of the banks. You see from some of these pictures, these are just demonstrations or photos of other stream stabilization projects. The larger photo here on the right is a good example of some of the work that can be possible in this area. I guess our last primary component of this project is, again, interpretation. We would use this, and again, all of the projects that we're doing on the site, and use them as opportunities to get the public more involved, get the people more involved in why this was an important project and how we went about it and the benefits of practicing those sustainable techniques as well as restoring the resources of the site. And I'm not going to go through all of those, but I think that, we always talk about some of the benefits of having green space or open space and natural resources in the community. These are just